And now on the space show, we're going to the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. The topic under discussion is international partnerships. How essential will they be in forging a new human future in space? Will they be a help or a hindrance as we progress out into the solar system? Can we take these, can these international agreements be reliable? Just how binding are MOUs, Memoranda of Understandings? In our last episode of this Moon Mars series of Space Show specials, we heard from former astronaut and now president of the Canadian Space Agency, Marc Garneau. One of Canada's notable contributions in space have been the robotic arms on the Space Shuttle and the International Space Station. We also heard the experience of Volker Liebig as a program director of DLR, the German Space Agency. The DLR has had a 30-year history of working with NASA. This includes both manned missions such as Spacelab and unmanned probes to the planets. This evening, they face questions from the nine commissioners who want to probe the limits of international camaraderie. Chairman Pete Aldridge leads out by asking Marc Garneau for advice on international aspects of the Moon-Mars mission. In his guarded answer, the Canadian draws on his country's International Space Station experience.
One of the elements of the President's vision was for the Moon, Mars and beyond included international participation. We are in the process of trying to write the final report to the President, and hopefully we'll deliver it to him about the 2nd of June. Do you have some advice as to what we should say about international cooperation and this report that would go to the President? Dr. Garneau, let me start with you.
Thank you. I would certainly say that the international community would like to participate. That is my feeling, and I can certainly speak on behalf of Canada. I think that we must, at the same time, complete our engagement with respect to the International Space Station to show that we can successfully complete that international undertaking. And I think that we must learn some lessons from that particular experience. I think that, as the President himself said, this isn't a race. This is a long-term program. Nevertheless, even though it is spread out over a long period of time, I think that, and people were talking about communicating before in the previous panel, I think that the one way to maintain public support is to show that this is a serious scientific, technological, and human endeavor. Not try to spin it. I think spinning only works for a little while. And that the best way to achieve the support over a very long period of time is to make it happen roughly on schedule, definitely within cost, and to achieve what we say we're going to do. I think that is something where we have failed a little bit in our first undertaking, and it's very important that we complete that task. I think that public support within Canada, if I can judge that support, tends to wane when there are continuous stories about overruns mm-hmm. and schedule slips. Mm-hmm. So it's particularly important with a 30-plus year vision that I think we frame this as a very serious undertaking by an international community, not try to overhype it, and take that approach, but do what we say we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, in his formal testimony, DLR's Volker had already referred to Germany's international partnership experience.
Yes, first of all, I would like to say that what Marc Garneau expressed is more or less also our view. We strongly believe that to be successful with international participation and I feel a mission to Mars or Moon and beyond is something for mankind, not just something for one nation. It's also something for more than one generation of scientists. So it should be done together to a certain extent. But it's important to show reliability and continuity for the first step, how we expressed it before. And I have no doubt that public support is available in Europe as well. In Germany, public support for space issues is tremendous, especially when we look what happened with Mars exploration and all these things, they're all in the headlines. Political support is somewhat more difficult because it's connected to budgets, and at least at this time we have all our budget problems at home, and so I would not expect that a very quick answer is coming. So if you ask for advice, and I would say please keep the possibility to cooperate open also for a longer time period. Everything is on a long time scale. It's a long time scale vision, and I'm sure there will be many partners worldwide to join you.
Pete Aldridge has in mind several models for international space cooperation and asks Mark Garneau to comment on them.
One of the a model that's being thought about in this process consists of two different approaches. One approach could be that there are elements of robotic missions that could be done by individual nations as it contributes to a overall architecture in which you bring your robotic mission and it accomplishes a particular mission. Another model might be that there is a larger component of which nations bring their components to fit into a larger piece, much like the International Space Station. And Dr. Garneau may recall there's a model called the Joint Strike Fighter that Canada is participating in which the system integrator selects the components on a best value basis in a competition, and it becomes international by definition through that process in a contractor-to-contractor relationship under an overall umbrella of government agreement. Are those two models consistent with how we might plan international participation in this particular initiative?
I believe that either model may turn out to be the best model, but I think the very first thing that we have to do is to decide amongst ourselves what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And when we have decided what we want to do, I think that will, in a sense, turn us towards one of the models. I mentioned in my opening notes that we should bear in mind what partners have in terms of their own capabilities and their objectives. They may dovetail very well. On the other hand, where there is duplication, we want to, I think, if we're going to really work as a partnership, avoid that. I couldn't say at this point which of the models is better, but once we determine what we really want to do, once that roadmap is there, I think that either model could be the best model. Yeah.
Now, Germany's Volker Liebig chips in with examples of existing international cooperation that fit Pete Aldridge's models.
Clearly depend on getting this architecture down to what we want to do first. And then, of course, I know NASA is working on that now. Dr. Liebig?
I personally believe that there is no real contradiction between the two models. And as a matter of fact, I would expect that both will coexist. On the one hand, we will see many missions worldwide which are somehow complementing to the Moon-Mars mission. Even if Europe, for example, does some of the missions independently, as we do it with Mars Express, you see how much cooperation is between the NASA program and the European program. So Mars Express is used as relay for the rovers. You help to search for our Beagle lander. So it's, as a matter of fact, it is existing, even so the elements were independently driven. And I'm not the expert on the Joint Strike Fighter model. I think Admiral Steidler is, and he's in charge of the project, so I'm sure his experience will flow in. Of course, one can imagine industry-to-industry direct cooperation. I don't believe that in such an endeavor it can come without an umbrella, a governmental umbrella. It's necessary also to raise funds. Well, and the rest will have to be seen. For our situation at home, I already said that at the moment we don't plan to have big infrastructure participations like we had it with the space station, so we try to reorient a bit. But we have very interesting technologies available.
Commissioner Walker, during his 20 years in the United States Congress, had oversight of NASA's budget. This gave him an acute awareness of the funding vagaries that can bedevil international space projects.
Dr. Liebig, you pointed out in your remarks that the EU is now consists of 450 million people in reasonably robust economies. Your total GNP is something approximating what the United States has at the present time. We are also under severe budget constraints in our country, and yet of that we prioritize about $16 billion a year of money that goes to NASA to support these broad-based programs. ESA testified here yesterday. They get about $3 billion a year. I'm not certain just exactly what the individual budgets are of France and Germany and so on, but I don't think it comes close to the adding up throughout the European Union to the $16 billion that the U.S. puts in place. Since ISS is a priority, and since there are going to be a number of applications coming off that, I mean, is there any movement at all in Europe to increase the amount of money that the taxpayers there are going to contribute to the overall space effort so that, in fact, we have not only technology sharing but burden sharing?
Yeah, thank you for the question. As member of the German Space Agency, of course, we lobby at home with our government, and I know my colleagues from the other European agencies with their governments to increase, exactly with these arguments, our space spendings. But of course, we have to see the realities. We spend about $5 billion in Europe altogether on the civil space side. Every year, $3 billion goes to ESA. And the process, which has also been led by Germany in bringing in the European Commission, at least in a political responsibility for space, is, of course, one of the answers. There are, at least we hope so, there will be available additional funds for what we do in space. The Commission believes, or at the moment expresses in the White Book, that they feel more responsibility for future infrastructures, for applications, for environment, etc. But this could, if this is taken over, for example, by new budget lines in the Commission, we could free other budget lines in our R&D budgets we get from our national governments. So I'm pretty sure we cannot come really close to you with your 15, 17 billion per year you give to NASA. That is just a dream for us. We would like to have that in the European Space Agency as well. But I hope we can close a little bit the gap we have between Europe and the US.
Germany's Volker Liebig responding to a question from the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commissioner Bob Walker. One issue that has emerged at this hearing is the reliability of the United States as a partner in space projects. The United States does not have the regulatory framework that governs the operations and funding of the European Space Agency. Commissioner Carly Fiorina casts a curly hypothetical to the German and the Canadian.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for coming. I want you to, if you will, suspend reality just for a moment and assume for a moment that the U.S. decides this mission isn't worth it, that we're not going to go to Moon and Mars and beyond, and that we will stay where we are. What do you suppose the European Union would do? What would the Canadians do?
In terms of cement space exploration?
In terms of space exploration, in terms of how you would think about your own involvement in space.
Yeah. Well, it's a question of the time scale, of course. In short term, I'm sure we would concentrate on what we already have decided to do. It's this increase in space applications, Galileo, digital divide, etc. These are the expression of the new thinking, the paradigm change in the European space programs. This does not keep us from having a space science, space exploration program already programmed until 2013 and beyond. So we have a couple of very interesting missions coming up, and of course we would follow this path. They go to many different objects, to comets, to Mars, to Venus, to Jupiter moons, etc. So there's very interesting things upcoming. I don't think mankind will stop to explore this solar system, but it will take longer. And you always need an entrepreneur, and so in this century at least, it was the U.S. to lead these efforts.
I don't think I have to suspend my disbelief here. It's going to happen one way or the other. It's just a question of how long it takes. If the United States decided it wasn't worth it, if we assume that their exploration program related to searching for water, the Mars missions that go at least to the end of this decade continue, I think there's probably scope for still working with the United States. Canada is working with the United States in that respect anyway. And we would work with, as we are at the moment, looking at possibilities with the Aurora program within the European Space Agency. We, as a country, will continue to look for partners who want to accomplish what we would like to do scientifically in terms of space exploration. There's no question if the United States gets off the boat, it's going to take a lot longer, and it's going to be a more torturous path to reach that end aim. But I think that there's sufficient mobilization across the space agencies of the world that it's going to happen one way or the other.
Commissioner Paul Spoutis now pitches the really curved ball of the hearing. Off the record, everyone knows that the United States has not always been a reliable partner. Additionally, in the wake of the 2002 Columbia disaster, the American commitment to the space station appeared, in 2004, to be wavering. Garneau was the first to batter up, followed by Liebig.
I just, point of clarification, you both mentioned that you'd like the U.S. to live up to her commitments on ISS. But my understanding of what the President announced is he wants the first return shuttle to flight consistent with shuttle crew safety, complete the construction of ISS, continue our participation in ISS research for at least the next decade, although change with a slight change in focus. What commitments have we made that we're not living up to under this plan?
I am satisfied personally that NASA is going to support continuous research after the station is completed in 2010, the current plan, until 2016 in terms of performing research on that. My concern is, in order to do viable research between 2010 and 2016, there has to be a certain amount of, if you like, mass transfer capability between the station and Earth, and between Earth and the station. So, although the station may be in a form that is called complete, will we be able to pursue the science as vigorously as we would like to between 2010 and 2016? I'm going on word of mouth, if you like, that will happen. And I think it is important for me as a partner to be able to reassure my country that we will live up to our full expectation, which is to do research on the International Space Station.
Well, that's more or less the concerns we have. One is crew number, crew size. We need at least more than three, we believe six, to make the utilization we intended to do, and we prepared. We have the user communities stand by, and we know from the new initiative here that the U.S. is going to concentrate on life science only, but we have also a viable material science community waiting. We have facilities prepared. We have concern we will not have download capacity the moment the shuttle retires, because then we have only only Soyuz to bring masses back. We ask ourselves what we do if some accident happens or anything unplanned happens. We have seen with Mir what can happen. And last but not least, this has already been mentioned in the session before, what are we doing with the IAS if it comes to deorbit it? So you can't just let it come down as big as it is, and the single modules are not foreseen to deorbit themselves, so there has to be a planning for that. So these are some questions. I'm sure if you go in more details, you find some more, but that's a bit the context. And last but not least, of course, budgets is a question. If this Moon Mars initiative wants to reach something, it needs budgets. And if you can't increase another budget far beyond this 17 billion every year, you have, of course, to take budgets away from other programs. Mm-hmm. So that's in a nutshell what we are concerned about.
Unfortunately, we run out of time again. I'd like to thank the panel for coming to New York and being with us and presenting your testimony. It's been very nice. Thank you.
Pete Aldridge bringing this session of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission to a close. We've been in New York discussing what role international partnerships can play in humanity's future exploration of space. In our next episode of these Space Show Specials, we shall return to New York when the discussion will turn to the role of the media in giving people the big picture about space exploration. This program has used audio from the Commission hearings that was digitally transferred to Southern FM by the Space Show's very own Alan Walker. This series is written and narrated by Andrew Rennie.